Morning, church.
Morning.
Man, it's good to see you. Good to be together. We are here near the end of the school year, and I know there's a lot going on. We've got a lot of folks missing this morning. And if there's somebody near you who's normally here and they're not here this morning, please just reach out to them. Give them a letter of recognition that they should have been here or something like that. No, don't do that. But you can tell people we miss them, that we love them. I know some are out of town, and I pray that they'll have a safe journey and a successful trip and all that. But it is now, it feels like we're getting more and more into summer. Last night we had my daughter Addison's graduation party, and it was a great celebration. And we had my family is in, my wife's family is in, and it was just a really a great thing. We took, you know, of course, we got to take family pictures, things like that. And this was just one of my favorites. This is my wife's family. Now, for those of you with a keen eye, you may notice not everybody in this photo is related to me. See if you can spot. But he looks enough like my brother-in-law's son right there that I was just seeing this little redhead right here, and I thought, what is he doing out there making all these things? But he was just told to get out of the pool and get in the family photo, so he did. It's one of my very favorite pictures from the whole night. It was really a great night, and some of you were there and really, really appreciated your presence. But we had family and some of Addison / Mariana's friends from school, and some of Rebecca's friends from her work, and it was just a really great thing. Yeah, but seeing Brody pointing like that, I mean, the unnamed child pointing like that, reminded me of a statue. How many of you have heard of the Crazy Horse Memorial? I mean, raise your hand if you've heard about that. Okay. It's called the Crazy Horse Memorial, and it's this carving of the Lakota warrior, Crazy Horse, who is riding a horse with his arm outstretched. He's pointing towards his tribal lands. And the Crazy Horse Memorial website describes it, they call it, a stunning and unique monument in the Black Hills of South Dakota, honoring the heroic legacy of the Lakota warrior and the Native American culture. Now, this is in the Black Hills of North Dakota, and South Dakota. It's only about 17 miles from Mount Rushmore, which you're probably more familiar with. But this, by comparison, is enormous. The sculpture's final dimensions, when they're planned it out, it's going to be 641 feet long, 563 feet tall. The outstretched arm alone is going to be over 250 feet, like 260 some odd feet. The finger, just the finger at the end of his hand, is going to be 30 feet long. It is enormous. If it is completed, it will be the world's tallest or the second tallest statue, behind only the Statue of Unity in India. Maybe you've seen pictures of that. It's really tall, but this will be much bigger because of its breadth and the width of it. But as you can see from this, it's incomplete. They haven't finished it yet. In fact, it is far from complete. And blasting on this particular statue began in 1948. It began in 1948, and there's like no end in sight. Now, when they started, to be fair, they thought it would take 30 years. When they planned this all out, they thought it would take about 30 years to make this. But as of 2023, there is no timeline for when it will be completed. They hope to have the head and the hair, and you can see this is what it's supposed to look like when it's done. That's the shape it's supposed to take. The hair and the outstretched arm, they hope to have that done by 2037. So we're talking about 100 years to get the top part of the statue done, right? Can you imagine what it would be like to start working on a project of this scale, knowing that it's not going to be completed in your lifetime? In fact, it's probably not going to be completed in your children's lifetime. Likely not even in your grandchildren's lifetime will this project be completed. I don't know about you, but that would kind of drive me a little bit nuts. I mean, thinking about it would make me anxious. To leave something this big and this important undone, unfinished, open-ended. I mean, what if there's no one to finish it after you? What if, you know, you're this great sculptor and you've started this great thing and then there's nobody behind you that's a great sculptor who wants to take this on? Or what if the person who takes it on after you gets it all wrong, or right? Or what if no one takes it up after you and it never gets completed? What if it never gets finished? It's kind of an existential question, isn't it? I mean, some of us are at the point in life where we're thinking about existential questions, and we're thinking about our lives and our life's work. And, you know, here I've raised two kids, and they're heading out of the house. And so what am I left with besides a lovely wife? What is my life's work going to look like? Like, as they go out into the world, what's going to become of it, right? It's a pretty daunting question. How should we live when our life's work is open-ended, dangerously unfinished, seemingly dangling by the thinnest of threads? Well, this morning, we're going to be finishing up the book of Deuteronomy. No applause. Hold your applause to the end. We're going to be finishing up our study of the book of Deuteronomy, and we're going to find that the author, Moses, is nearing the end of his own life. And because of sin, if you've read the story earlier, you know that Moses sinned, and so God told him he would never enter into the promised land. And so Moses knows that he's never going to set foot in the land that was like his greatest life's work. He is never going to get to experience the fruits of his labors. He's never going to smell the air on the other side of the Jordan. He's never going to build a home, plant a garden, start a family. He's never going to know how life over there is really going to go. So now he knows he's gotten older and his time is drawing near, and here they come up to the edge of the promised land, and he knows, I can't go over there, so something's got to give here. So what's he going to say? What's he going to do? How is he going to live and die with so much unfinished business hanging over his head? So in Deuteronomy chapter 33, Moses begins his ending with a blessing, right? He's come to the end of his life and he gives a blessing. And by the way, in Scripture, when you see particularly fathers giving blessings, it's usually on their deathbed or thereabouts. They know that their life is drawn to an end and they want to pass on this blessing. So Moses does this, but not just for like his genetic children, but for all the children of Israel. And he begins this blessing not with talking about how great his kids are or how great the tribes are. He begins this blessing with God. And this is what he says. He says, "The Lord came from Sinai and dawned over them from Seir. He shone forth from Mount Paran. He came with myriads of holy ones from the south, from his mountain slopes. Surely it is you who love the people. All the holy ones are in your hand. At your feet, they all bow down. And from you, they receive instruction. The law that Moses gave us, the possession of the assembly of Jacob." So, just pause right here. Before he ever pronounces a blessing, right? The first blessing on the tribes, before he says anything about Gad or Asher or Reuben or Dan or Israel or Judah or any of the tribes, before he says the first thing about Levi or Simeon, before doing any of that, before saying, "You know, may God protect you in the land or grant you victory of your enemies. May you be abundant and have great, you know, number of offspring, or may your crops really succeed." Before he says any of that, Moses starts with God, the source of the blessing. He begins his blessing on the tribes by talking about God. Now, often when we think about the blessings in our lives, And we do have a bunch. We tend to forget that. We look at our families. We look at our possessions, like all the stuff we got. We maybe look at our talents. We maybe look at our jobs, or in our country, maybe look at our rights and freedoms. Certainly, people in other countries may do the same, but we may even acknowledge that these things, they're all good things, and may even call them blessings. But it is not a blessing because we think it's good. It is not a blessing because we like it or because we enjoy it. It's not a blessing unless it originates with God. Because blessings always begin with God. 100% of the time, if it is in your life and it is a blessing, it always comes from God. Families, and some of you sadly know this firsthand, families that are far from God are far from being a blessing. And it becomes one of the saddest things in our lives. When we have jobs, even high-paying jobs, even jobs we love, but they become mere consumers of our time and energy when they are not from God. All those possessions we love, our homes, our cars, our clothes, our food, everything we've got stocked in the pantry and everything we got stocked in the closet, all of our possessions, when they do not become from God, become anchors that weigh us down and distractions from the real truth. If all of that is not from God, it is worse than worthless. It is harmful. Even the rights and freedoms that, as much as they are coveted and as much as we appreciate them, they hold terrible potential apart from God. And I think we see that firsthand in our own country, right? There is the potential to harm, to divide, to tear people apart, to marginalize the weak. There's potential to kill, steal, and destroy when they are apart from God. You can have all these amazing rights, and I've got all these amazing freedoms, and I can use it to hate on you, right? I've got that freedom. I can hate you. I can act and say and do terrible things toward you because I've got these amazing freedoms and rights. Even freedoms and rights are not a blessing if they are not rooted in God. So Moses wants to make sure that all Israel, that the whole nation understands that everything good they have, everything good they will have, everything good they will be, that all of the benefits they're going to receive, all the prosperity and the abundance and the safety and the security, everything comes from God alone. And after pronouncing these blessings, and he goes through, we're not going to go through all the blessings that he pronounces on each individual tribe, Moses concludes all the blessings in a really similar way. He said, there is no one like the God of Jeshurun. By the way, Jeshurun's a really cool name. You can do a whole word study on Jeshurun. Basically, Jeshurun means the righteous one. It's another name for Israel, but not just for Israel. It's like when Israel is idealized, when they are who they're supposed to be, when they become what they could become, he calls them Jeshurun. And he says that God is the God of Jeshurun, who rides across the heavens to help you and on the clouds with his majesty, which is also just a little subtle thing in there, because Baal, and you've probably heard about the false god Baal, Baal is depicted as riding on clouds. That's one of the great stories about Baal that everyone would have known, was that Baal had this one time he rode on the clouds, and he's like, no. God is the one who rides across the sky and on the clouds in his majesty. Forget about Baal. Baal's nothing. God is the one who controls that. The eternal God is your refuge, and underneath are the everlasting arms. And he skips down a little bit. He says, blessed are you, Israel. Who is like you? A people saved by the Lord. He is your shield and your helper and your glorious sword. I mean, God is everything to you, right? You know what made Israel so great? It wasn't because they had really fertile land, or because they were really shrewd in their political dealings, or because they were really, really smart in their business dealings. It wasn't because they had a powerful military or this great strategic location in the political landscape. What made Israel great, what made them unique among every other nation on the face of the earth, was that their blessings and their salvation came from God alone. That's what made Israel amazing, was that all of their blessings and all of their salvation came from God. Sometimes we, as Christians, we get the idea that in order for us to be important, for us to stick out, for us to be relevant in our culture, that we need more. We think we need more money, or maybe more influence, or maybe more power, maybe more political power, maybe more motivated voters. I don't know, but we think we need more. And those desires, those achievements that we go out and we go after, those make us look exactly like everyone else in our culture. The more that we long for makes us look like everyone who's not a Christian. Everyone else in our world who is money and power hungry. We're just another scheming political group. Just another greedy business. Just another selfish individual. God knows this. God knows that for us to stand out in our world, He has to be enough. That all of our blessings have to come from Him. Moses knew this too. And so God is working in concert with Moses to make sure that the nation of Israel knows this too. That they cannot seek their blessings by building a stronger military. They cannot seek their blessings by accumulating more money. They cannot seek their blessings by formulating political alliances or having more wives or having more kids or any of the other ways that people normally try to get blessing, right? God says, you cannot do that because all the blessings come from me. So when Moses, in the next chapter, chapter 34, he climbs up to Mount Nebo and he looks across the Jordan and he sees the promised land for the very first time. I mean, he's been walking here for years, right? For literally for years. He has gone through so much life in the desert and he finally sees for the very first time the promised land. And he knows that this thing is no longer in his hand. That is outside of his control, that the blessings have been given, that the direction has been laid out by the law, right? He talks about that quite a bit. But all of it is rooted in God himself. All of it. And if it was all God's work to begin with, then I'll just have to trust that God gets it done when I'm dead. If it was all God's work to begin with, I guess it's all in his hands right now. The Apostle Paul put it this way, that being confident of this very thing, that he who's begun a good work in you will complete it until the day of Jesus Christ. Now, often we read this and we think about the good work that's going on in us, right? Like we started and we were really bad and God's been working in us and he's making us better, he's making us different, he's making us more righteous. He's begun this good work in us. And sometimes that's true. In fact, I would argue it's true all the time. But it's not the only good work God has started in you. God started in a good work in you when he began your influence on your family for Jesus Christ. God started a good work for you in you when he began your relationship with your friends and your coworkers and your neighbors. God began a good work in you, and God is faithful to complete those works until the end too. Not just making you more like him, but making them more like him, because he began this good work in you and he is faithful to complete that work until the end. And Deuteronomy was written, you know, hundreds of years before the coming of the Apostle Paul or the coming of Jesus Christ in the flesh. And it's already looking forward, looking to the horizon, looking across the River Jordan to the work that God is going to do. It sounds like the end because here's Moses, right? This great character, this prophet that no one else is like until Jesus comes along. And Moses has been leading them on this journey through the wilderness, you know, out of slavery and to the procurement of the law handled down. And here they are at the promised land finally, and he's dying. So it looks like the end, but in fact, it's the beginning. It's very much like starting a new work, a work that God is going to carry on after Moses is gone. Because all this we've been reading about, as much as we might think it's the story of Moses, it's not. It's the story of God. And this story, it goes on after Moses is gone. It knows that the people of Israel are going to fail. It knows that they're going to rebel. It knows they're going to be carried off into exile. It knows all of that. but it opens the expectation that God will enable his people to live such faithful lives that they bear witness to the world about the God we serve. God knows we're going to mess up, and he knows we're going to mess up so bad, and still he empowers us to change the world for him. Like Moses, you and I, we will probably never see the final results of our service to God. But because we are a part of God's story and not our own story, we can know that what we do matters. If all we are living for is ourselves and our means and our ends, it all washes away like sands on the shore of a beach. But we are a part of a bigger story, part of God's story. Even when we cannot see the end from our limited perspective, we can know that what we've done matters. And so our blessing for you this morning, my blessing for you this morning, is not that you will go out and get success or that you will go out and get achievements, not that you will go out and get recognition, but that you will become tools of God's glory, instruments of God's righteousness, not because you're going to get so much done, but because God is going to do so much in you. It's interesting that the night before he was assassinated, some of you may have read this before, but the night before Dr. Martin Luther King was assassinated, he was asked a question, and he responded with this kind of miniature sermon. And in that sermon, he talks about this very chapter, about Moses standing on Mount Nebo. This is a quote from him. He says, "Well, I don't know what will happen now. We've got some difficult days ahead, but it doesn't matter with me now, because I've been to the mountaintop, and I don't mind. Like anybody, I'd like to live a long life. Longevity has its place, but I'm not concerned about that now. I just want to do God's will, and he's allowed me to go up to the mountain, and I've looked over, and I've seen the promised land. And I may not get there with you, but I want you to know tonight that we, as a people, we will get to the promised land." Dr. King never saw all the fruits of his labor, but by faith, like Moses, he could see that God was faithful to complete it until the end. May God bless you as you take the next step in God's glorification this week. If we can pray for you, lift you up, encourage you, or bring you into the family of God by putting on Jesus Christ in baptism this morning, we want you to know we'll help you with that any way we can. Won't you come as we stand and as we sing?